Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a hearing today before the Senate Intelligence Committee, where the Director of National Intelligence and the heads of the NSA, FBI, and CIA testified on Russia's role in hacking our recent election, with the DNI concluding that Russia's president ordered the influence campaign that helped defeat Hillary Clinton, who Putin loathes, and helped elect Donald Trump, who during the campaign cited damaging information released by WikiLeaks over 100 times. Andrew Cutchins, a senior fellow at Georgetown University Center for Eurasian, Russian, and East European Studies, joins us to discuss a way forward from the current broken and bitter relations between the U.S. and Russia, and his new report at the Center for Global Interests, Elevation and Calibration, A New Russia Policy for America. Then we'll assess today's confirmation hearings for the Trump administration's nominee for Attorney General, Senator Jeff Sessions. Lisa Graves, who served in all three branches of the federal government as Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, as Chief Counsel for Nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and as Deputy Chief for the U.S. Courts, joins us to discuss the evidence presented against the Alabama Senator and the charges of racism highlighted by demonstrators inside the hearing room wearing KKK robes, which Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III described as very painful, claiming it was because of his name that he was considered a racist. Then finally, we will look further into Senator Sessions' testimony with Daniel Goldberg, the legal director at the Alliance for Justice, who was chief of staff of the Department of Justice Office of Legislative Affairs. We will anticipate tomorrow's unprecedented testimony by Senator Cory Booker, the first sitting U.S. senator expected to testify against a Senate colleague at a confirmation hearing, and whether Sessions should be disqualified to be the nation's top lawyer on the basis of his record on civil rights. And joining us now is Andrew Cutchins, a senior fellow at the Center for Eurasian, Russian, and East European Studies at Georgetown University. His recent publications include Perspective, What's to Follow the Demise of the U.S.-Russian Reset, The End of the Reset, Russian Foreign Policy, Continuity and Change. And he has a new report at the Center for Global Interests, Elevation and Calibration, A New Russia Policy for America. Welcome to Background Briefing, Andrew Cutchins.
Hi, Ian. Nice to be with you again.
Well, thank you, Andrew. And it's an extraordinary moment, not just the testimony that came out today before the Senate Intelligence Committee, but of course, a big chunk of the secret report that Donald Trump was briefed with last Friday has now made itself to the its way to the public. I guess nothing stays secret for too long in Washington. Mm-hmm. And it's extraordinarily damning stuff involving allegations of a honey trap, which is something I'd heard about very many months ago at the Ritz-Rute Hotel in the presidential suite there in Moscow, involving Donald Trump and some Russian prostitutes, etc. I won't even go into the details because it's too salacious. But there it is in black and white. And apparently the president himself was briefed by the heads of the intelligence services saying, this is what Russia has on you. So we couldn't be in more of a pickle.
Well, I'm not, you know, the problem with the report that was released last Friday on the Russian hacking is that, you know, they can't provide the data and the evidence that supports the argument that this was, you know, a strategic operation that was ordered by Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia himself. Because to do so would be to reveal, you know, the sources and methods behind which we obtained the information. So, I mean, the information, reading the report, I was a little bit embarrassed, frankly, Ian, in that it looked like it was a rush job, understandably so, because the Obama administration wanted to make sure they got a statement out on this before they had to leave office. It was not very convincing. So I don't think that the report itself that was released, you know, did a favor, you know, to those, you know, who want to make the argument that, you know, the Russians, you know, had a strategy and made a significant difference, you know, in this, in the election in 2016.
Well, I'm referring there to the report that was just leaked today by CNN and BuzzFeed. It's a confidential, sensitive source company intelligence report. U.S. presidential election Republican candidate Donald Trump's activities in Russia and compromising relationship with the Kremlin that goes through all of this stuff that I touched on, and plus the what was behind the firing of Ivanov, the head of the presidential administration, an old KGB colleague of Putin's, to be replaced, and it shows the role of Peskov being in charge of this operation, and how the professionals like Ivanov thought it was reckless, and along with Medvedev thought it was crazy, and they were shunted aside. So I guess we'll wait for the dust to settle on all of this. This is stuff that apparently Trump was briefed with on Friday, but it was just made public today. Let's talk, since you haven't seen this document, I take it. So,
no, I haven't had a chance to see this report yet. So,
I guarantee you, it will come your way.
It sounds pretty juicy.
It is very juicy. So, let's talk about. I mean, I spoke the other day, on Sunday, in fact, with Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer in Moscow, and I asked him about first of all, what a Trump-Tillerson-Putin deal could be in terms of oil, and he didn't think that there was much possibility of any grand strategy there because of the price of oil, and particularly in the Arctic. It'd have to be over $100 a barrel to be viable. So then I said, well, what is Putin's economic plan then to get out of this economic hole he's in? And he said, well, he doesn't have one. He's the czar. He mediates between factions. And then he went on to describe the two main factions. He called the liberal faction the Kudrin faction, which with the a former official who's close to Putin, and the head of the central bank and the finance minister, who want to open up the economy more to the West, stop the subsidies of these vast state
the liberal
owned,
technocrats.
Yeah, and they want to spend less on defense. And then you got the other faction, which is the the military-industrial complex, for want of a better description. So, do you see that then as a dichotomy?
Well, it recalls Winston Churchill's famous line about Russian politics being the bulldog fighting under the rug. You know, there's a lot of tussling going on, but it's very non-transparent, and it's hard to make a definitive judgment about, what is actually going on. Certainly, there are a number of data points over the past 6 months that would suggest that, Mr. Kudrin and others who are promoting an agenda for economic reform, structural reform, to put Russia on a more sustainable path for economic growth, they're fighting an uphill battle. If we go back to the U.S.-Russia relationship, and we go back and we look at the possibilities for, this relationship has been as bad as it has ever been in my lifetime. I mean, as a professional, and I'm 57 years old, and you can go back to the early 1980s of what that time was called a new Cold War in the Reagan administration, when the bulletin of atomic scientists' atomic clock was at 3 minutes before midnight, and there it is again today. There's just it's rather bizarre to kind of realize that 25 years after the collapse of the Soviet Union, when there were a lot of hopes and expectations, really on both sides about the relationship, that here we are again talking about the possibility of a new Cold War, and that then begs the question about what can the Trump administration actually do about it? And the report that you referred to, Ian, that I wrote and interviewed about over 40 officials that had been involved in the relationship over the last 25 years, both in Russia and in the United States, who were all expressing, I think there was a consensus about the concern about the the danger in the relationship that we've come to at this point, and we need to find a way to diffuse it. There's no easy way out of this. You know, Mr. Trump, you know, has written about the art of the deal. He wants to make the big deal. I'm not sure that there's a big deal immediately out there to be had, because then it kind of brings us back to, all right, well, and this is kind of the first issue on the agenda, it's Ukraine. And this is why we have economic sanctions against Russia, because of the seizure of Crimea, the annexation of Crimea, and the Russians' activities in supporting the insurgency in the Donbass. So is Mr. Putin really ready to make a compromise or ready to make some concessions with the Trump administration on Ukraine, which would justify the United States taking the measures to, you know, remove the sanctions? I'm not sure, but I think it's worth testing the proposition. If the Trump administration tries to go forward and remove the sanctions on Russia without getting Russia to actually remove its, you know, forces in the Donbass and to respect the Ukrainian-Russian border, then the U.S. Congress is going to intercede and they're going to legislate sanctions against Russia, and that would be a far worse scenario for the Trump folks. So my sense is that the Trump folks are aware of the risks of, at this point, you know making unrequited, so to speak, concessions to the Russians in an effort at a reset. I think they're going to be, you know, challenging and difficult negotiations. I actually think that the choice of Rex Tillerson, it'll be interesting to see, to hear his confirmation hearings tomorrow. He could be a quite inspired choice as Secretary of State. I mean, just because of the fact that, you know, is the head of ExxonMobil, he cut major deals, you know, with the Russians for the development of their oil and gas resources. Doesn't mean he's a friend of Putin. He was just doing his job, you know, as the head of ExxonMobil, the biggest, most highly valued, you know, energy company in the world. But what he does have, Ian, as a result of this interaction with Mr. Putin and Mr. Sechin, I think the second most important person or most powerful person in Russia right now, is that he has their respect, and that's important. That's important. And, you know, we'll see how things play out.
And again, I'm speaking with Andrew Cutchins, who's a senior fellow at the Center for Eurasian, Russian and European Studies at Georgetown University. And he's the author of a new report at the Center for Global Interest, Elevation and Calibration, A New Russia Policy for America. And as you say in your report, it's not about a new reset, but it's about how to that essentially we're living in a situation where we're undergoing excessive risks because of this current downward trajectory of U.S.-Russian relations, and and you need to sort of find a way to clear the smoke of mutual acrimony. So just to follow up on this, though, if a deal could be done, I mean, in other words. We've invested enormously in China, and we haven't in Russia. And if the liberal faction wants to be more of a part of the international community and improve the lives of the Russian people, as opposed to the military-industrial complex in Russia and these vast state-owned industries that are so inefficient, there is obviously a deal there, and if the U.S. could reduce its defense spending in a reciprocal way, we could spend more money on our people and their real needs, as opposed to things like the F-35, which are a massive waste of money.
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit, in some ways, it's a little bit reminiscent of the early 1970s when the strategic triangle between, you know, the Soviet Union in China, the United States, was, you know, kind of the driving, you know, fact, sort of, or a very significant, you know, aspect of U.S. foreign policy. I mean, the Nixon administration, they wanted to find a way to get out of the war in Vietnam. They saw Russia as the rising power, and they saw that if they could, you know, kind of normalize relations, bring on China as a counterweight on their side against Russia, that that would be useful and effective. And it was. It was a very significant had a very significant impact on the Soviet Union. That was the topic of my PhD dissertation. But you know, now today, I mean, Russia is kind of in the position of what China was, you know, back in the early 1970s as a potential swing state. I don't want to overplay, you know, this triangle aspect to it, but I think this is part of the thinking of the Trump folks as they're coming into power. It looks like they're gonna play more hardball with China and then try to kind of defuse the relationship with the Russians and kind of pull the Russians a little bit further away from China than where they are today. And I think, you know, I think it is in Russia's interest. They don't want to become overly leveraged to the Chinese economically, politically, geopolitically. And this has been one of the side effects or impacts, I know, of the, you know, the sanctions and Russia's alienation from the West. So, you know, if we can find a way where we don't, you know, make kind of compromise fundamental interests. And I guess what I want to say here is we don't basically sell Ukraine, you know, down the river. We don't need to do that, and we shouldn't do that. But to kind of pull the Russians back into the orbit and improve, so that their relations with Europe, the EU, are better and us are better, then, I mean, that's a better kind of position for, you know, Russian foreign policy to be in. Remember, Ian, that the symbol of, you know, this the double-headed eagle of Tsarist Russia and the Russian flag today, the double-headed eagle looks in both directions, east and west. And what's happened with the Russians as a result of what they did in Ukraine and the alienation from the West, it's kind of pushed them closer to China, probably than they really want to be.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes, Andrew Cutchins, in your report, you conclude that the policy of calibration that you talk about, elevation and calibration, a new Russian policy for right. America, offers an alternative psychological approach to Putin and Russia. And that seems to be very important. At the end of the day, you know, he obviously is very sensitive, as is apparently Trump, to any kind of criticism. So do you think that, you know, rather than sort of call him a gangster and a thug, as people like Senator McCain do, and there's a certain amount of evidence to support that charge, is it time to sort of treat him with respect, even if you don't necessarily have that respect?
I think it is. I think the psychological aspect of the relationship is really important. It's like human relations, international relations. I mean, it's a kind of gratuitous denigration of your partner, whether they're sort of an adversary or whether a friend or you're trying to cultivate them, that's not going to have a very positive impact on their behavior. And unfortunately, I think that the market has kind of overcorrected in the direction of the last few years of demonization of Russia and demonization of Mr. Putin. So I think that, this really gets back to what is so fundamental about Russia. It is their sense that they are a great power, and they need to be respected like a great power. And this has been, you know, it really isn't kind of their, Mr. Putin would say, in their DNA, you know, going back centuries. And they have been a great power in, you know, European and global politics for several hundred years. And so I think that the one thing that was very difficult for us Americans and Europeans, I think Europeans are more sensitive to this because of in some countries of experiencing loss of empire, you know, was what it was like for the Russians back in 1991 when the Soviet Union collapsed. the empire collapsed and the sense of national identity and what you believed in. And that's, the psychological impact is our aspect of the relationship. I completely agree with you, and is very, very important. And that's why I think that sort of the elevation. Look, and Russia is a great power. I mean, heck, we say Mr. Obama says that, well, they're just a regional power. Okay, but they're a major regional power in Europe. They're a major regional power in the greater Middle East. They're a major regional power in East Asia. And these are the regional theaters that are most important for the advancement of U.S. core U.S. foreign and security national interests. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, get on with it. I think
throw him a bone.
I'm afraid we've run out of time, but I appreciate you joining us, Andrew Cutchins.
Thank you, Ian. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Andrew Cutchins, a senior fellow at the Center for Eurasian, Russian, and East European Studies at Georgetown University, and the author of a new report at the Center for Global Interests, Elevation and Calibration, A New Russia Policy for America. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back with an assessment of today's confirmation hearings for the Trump administration's nominee for Attorney General, Senator Jeff Sessions.
From Russia with love, I fly to you, much wiser since my goodbye to you. I've traveled the world.
I saw Carter, I saw Frank, tall white mansions and little shacks.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Lisa Graves, who served in all three branches of the federal government as Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, as Chief Counsel for Nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and as a Deputy Chief for the U.S. Courts. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lisa Graves.
Oh, thanks for having me on. It's nice to be on.
Well, thank you, Lisa. And you know, today's there's been a bombshell dropped today, a leak of the intelligence report that Donald Trump was briefed with last Friday. Not the one that was made public, but this is the evidence that the intelligence heads presented Donald Trump with, which had to make him deeply uncomfortable because it's all about the leverage that Putin might well have over Trump from a honey trap at the Ritz-Rut hotels in Moscow in November 2013 when he was over there for the Miss Universe contest. Apparently he was back in the presidential suite with a bunch of young Russian women, and they got up to all kinds of extraordinary antics, which all of which were videotaped by the FSB, and that goes on and on and on and on and on. So here we are about to talk about the nomination and confirmation of the Attorney General designate when, in the real world, the president-elect who's about to be inaugurated could well be impeached.
I was saying to someone the other day that it's a really surreal period that's about to get very real for us. This circumstance with Mr. Trump and with, you know, the persistent deceit and lying. I mean, the issue over Meryl Streep's speech and the claim that he never mocked a disabled reporter when everybody with their own eyes can see that he had is the least. In some ways, the least of it, although it's a very evocative and compelling and awful story, it's that we have a president-to-be, a president-elect who is not well acquainted with the truth, it seems, or doesn't care to tell it regularly through tweets and other things. And so I think the memo that leaked today, which, you know, some are disputing whether it's authentic or not, is certainly troubling and you know, not something that is not something that is unexpected, in the sense that I think a lot of people thought that Donald Trump probably had blackmail issues, that he's had an array of things that he's done in his lifetime that that could be very embarrassing. And, you know, there have already been many allegations of sexual misconduct by him, you know, sexual assault by him that he's denied and that women have attested to. And so I was thinking that, you know, Donald Trump couldn't get a clearance to be an entry-level attorney at the Justice Department because of his blackmail risk. He certainly couldn't get an FBI endorsement to become a federal judge because of his blackmail ability, based on all of, you know, an array of conduct before today, his financial dealings and more. And if these allegations, if this document is in fact authentic, it's even worse than anyone suspected.
Well, as I say, I've known about it for months and months and felt somewhat restrained in talking about it, but it's not surprising in a way, because after all, you know, Vladimir Putin came to power on a honey trap. He honey trapped the prosecutor general he was running against in his first election, and 2 days before the election, they played this video of, again, two young women in a Moscow hotel room getting up to all kinds of antics with this fellow who, of course, needless to say, Vladimir Putin won by about 90%.
It's one of those things where, and I don't know whether it's true with respect to Vegas, that what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, but I'm certain, given the history of honeypots, that what happens in Moscow doesn't stay in Moscow. And someone would be a fool to think otherwise, you know?
Well, let's turn to the subject that I called you about. I just had to sort of touch on this stuff because it is so explosive, and I've sort of been hinting at it for many months, and now it's out in the open. What about how did you think Sessions did today? Because I thought the introduction by the minority chair, Senator Dianne Feinstein, was absolutely devastating. Even though it was very polite, it was very devastating.
I thought that Senator Feinstein did a very good job in her remarks of really describing the concerns about Senator Sessions, the deep concerns about Senator Sessions' record and his extraordinarily extreme positions over many years. In fact, his consistently extreme positions over many years, and that was impressive. Senator Feinstein has not been the most progressive member of the United States Senate, but I think today she served her country well in setting out this case of concerns about Senator Sessions, the senator from Alabama, who's been named to be the Attorney General of the United States of America. I think that Senator Susan Collins is going to take a lot of heat from her constituents in Maine for her praise of Senator Sessions. But, you know, these nomination hearings are in some ways hard to watch because in some ways there's a lot of theater that goes on. And I think in this particular instance, one of the things about Senator Sessions, notwithstanding his, you know, consistent record of extreme positions, is that he is extremely polite in the process of being extremely extreme. And so, you know, it's not a situation where you have someone who is responding angrily or responding heatedly. You have someone who has you know, very good manners, but who has embraced an array of deplorable positions over time. And so, you know, these senators have a level of senatorial courtesy toward one another that that is part of the hallmark of the Senate, but that can be a little frustrating to watch, in part because the issues matter so much to people, and the effect of someone like Senator Sessions in that role at the Justice Department could have enormously devastating effects on many people's lives based on the positions that he takes or the actions that he takes or doesn't take.
And again, I'm speaking with Lisa Graves, who served as Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, as Chief Counsel for nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and as Deputy Chief for the U.S. Courts. And, of course, there were a number of outbursts with demonstrators, including a group wearing KKK robes. And, of course, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III described his earlier experience when he lost a federal judgeship by a Republican-controlled Judiciary Committee as very painful. But he also has made the claim that because of his name, he's been considered a racist. So that's an odd claim, is it not, to be...
I think it's odd, and I also thought it was, unusual or an unusual tack to take to describe himself as the witness to all of this history of racism in this country and suggest that perhaps he should have done more. And in fact, you know, he was there and he didn't do more. Those are the facts. And there's also the exaggeration of, you know, how much he did to handle other cases involving discrimination or, violations of civil rights laws and exaggerations there, and that sort of thing. But one of the things that I raised in my statements that I submitted to the committee is this question of this other consistent habit of Senator Sessions, which is that he basically tunes out information that's contrary to what he thinks. And he does so particularly when he likes someone. He defends people like Mr. Trump in the face of, you know, virtually unchallengeable evidence against him, including Mr. Trump's own words. Senator Sessions has been willing to defend Trump and to turn a blind eye to evidence, to information against someone. And so my concern that I put forward was that he would not stand up to Trump, that he would not that he would not investigate allegations of sexual misconduct, sexual harassment, high crimes and misdemeanors of Mr. Trump, corruption by Mr. Trump, because he is such a, you know, loyal person to the people he likes, that he will defend them against anything. And I think that's a tremendous flaw to have in an attorney general, and it is a trait that may be admirable in a friend, but would be the wrong trait to have at this time in our history for someone with those responsibilities to ensure that our laws are followed, that the president is not above the law, that no president is above the law.
Well, but the same, what you just said in terms of Sessions' attitude to Trump is reciprocated. I mean, Trump made it really clear that he chose Sessions because he was the first and only senator to support him. So an obscure senator from Alabama, this has been a major career boost to be the first and only guy to endorse Donald Trump. And that's... Trump is rewarding him simply based upon that fact.
That's right. The mutual loyalty there is extremely troubling when you have a president-elect who has, you know, a notorious disregard for the law, believes it to be basically negotiable and, in essence, in almost every instance, not actually binding on him, whether it's ordinary statutes or contracts or the First Amendment, which he doesn't think means what it says and he wants to change or thinks should be interpreted more favorably toward him. And so I'm very troubled that Senator Sessions has been rewarded for his loyalty to this demagogue and that his past actions indicate that he is more than willing to disregard facts that are against someone that he likes when he likes someone, that he will attack people who dare to blow the whistle on someone, who dare to speak up about their concerns about someone who's on his side. And I think that makes him perhaps a good advocate, but it would not make him a good Attorney General of the United States. And so that's why I oppose his nomination in addition to the merit, many things on the merit substantively in terms of his extreme positions on immigration and women's rights, on police brutality issues and more, voting rights. The list goes on and on. He's wrong on just about every issue under the sun, but he's polite about it.
Well, but he's having Trump is having a press conference tomorrow, the first one in 8 months, I think. And certainly the first one as president-elect. And given what the report that just came out today, I don't know whether, you know, I'm not totally convinced that we have a vigorous White House press corps. They don't want to burn their bridges, but maybe somebody's going to ask him about this report. And And the idea that the president-elect's going to be asked, well, is it true that in November of 2013 in the presidential suite of the Ritz-Rout Hotel in Moscow, you and six Russian young prostitutes were involved in urinating on the bed in which President Obama slept under your instructions, Mr. Trump, and then you later got up to other kinds of activities, which were, all of which were documented in a KGB or FSB honey trap. If I were there, I'd ask that question. But that's the we're starting out a presidency on that note. So it's not totally off the wall to think at some point or other there may be an impeachment. And then you wonder, where will Jeff Sessions be on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this, you know, this question of this press conference, I mean, on the one hand, it's a healthy, it's a good thing in a healthy democracy for a president to have press conferences where they are asked live questions by the press. On the other hand, I can't imagine Donald Trump telling the truth in response to any questions that he's asked. He is someone who just routinely lies, even when there are, you know, there's audio or video that tells the truth. And so my expectations aren't very high about, you know, what type of factual information will be gleaned from the press conference, no matter what questions are asked. But I think that with respect to Senator Sessions, I just think that he is not likely to be independent of Trump, and he's not likely to pursue tips to investigate Mr. Trump, because, as you point out, he's won the lottery through Mr. Trump, through being the only senator willing to embrace the demagoguery, this demagogue, and to do so on the claim of conservative principles. You know, he's someone who feels, I think, that he's pursued a righteous cause, and now he's being rewarded. I can't imagine he would bite the hand that feeds him.
Well, Lisa, I'm afraid we've run out of time, but obviously we should stay in touch, because I find this whole situation so extraordinary. And I thank you
that
for joining us.
Great.
Okay. Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Lisa Graves, who was a Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, Chief Counsel for Nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and Deputy Chief for the U.S. Courts. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back further looking into the testimony today of Senator Sessions. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Daniel Goldberg, who's the legal director at the Alliance for Justice and the former chief of staff of the Department of Justice Office of Legislative Affairs. He previously spent 6 years as a senior counsel to Senator Tom Harkin and the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. Welcome to Background Briefing, Daniel Goldberg.
Thank you. Honored to be here.
Well, thank you so much. And what's your impression so far of these day-long hearings in the Senate for the confirmation of Senator Jeff Sessions to be the next Attorney General? My sense is that as much as the Democrats are trying to pin him down on his record, he's basically deflecting most of what I've seen in the course of the day. And of course, on the Republican side, his colleagues are treating him almost in a laudatory way. So what's your take on it so far?
Well, I think that the Senator Sessions coming into this hearing had an enormous task in front of him, that his record over his career in public office has demonstrated somebody who does not believe in civil rights, somebody who does not believe in basic constitutional protections, and somebody who cannot be independent from President-elect Trump. He had a duty and a responsibility to the American people to demonstrate that he has the convictions, that he has the record, and he has the personal integrity required to inspire confidence that he can serve as the chief law enforcement officer in the United States. I don't think he did anything to alleviate the concerns of so many Americans throughout the country that this is somebody who will not fairly enforce some of our nation's most critical laws. He spoke in cliches. He spoke in sound bites. Whenever pressed on his record, whenever pressed as to what he will do as Attorney General, he reiterated repeatedly the cliche that he will enforce the laws. That does not alleviate the many, many concerns that so many people around the country have, that based on his record, whether it's his record bringing baseless fraud prosecutions against civil rights activists in Alabama, his record criticizing the Voting Rights Act as a piece of intrusive legislation, his record as voting against hate crime legislation, or his record voting against the Violence Against Women's Act. He did nothing to alleviate the concerns that the American people rightly have as to whether he will be not the president's lawyer, but the people's lawyer.
Well, it started out with the ranking member, Senator Feinstein, delivering a blistering summary of Senator Sessions' legislative record, which could hardly be divorced from his new job, if he is indeed to be confirmed as Attorney General. Let's listen to the opening clip from Senator Feinstein.
The senator before us this morning is someone that many of us on this committee has worked with for some 20 years, and that makes this very difficult for me. If confirmed, Senator Sessions will be the top official charged with faithfully and impartially enforcing all federal law. What we must do now in these hearings is determine what type of Attorney General Senator Sessions will be if confirmed. And let me express a deep concern. There is so much fear in this country. I see it, I hear it, particularly in the African American community. Throughout his Senate career, Senator Sessions has advocated an extremely conservative agenda. For example, he voted no and spoke for nearly 30 minutes in this committee against a Leahy Amendment 2 years ago that expressed the sense of the Senate that the United States would not bar people from entering this country based on their religion. He voted against each of three bipartisan comprehensive immigration bills. Twice, he voted against the DREAM Act, calling it a, quote, reckless proposal for mass amnesty, end quote. He voted against efforts to prohibit the use of waterboarding and other so-called enhanced interrogation techniques, calling them lawful. These interrogation techniques are and were, at the time, illegal. Senator Sessions voted against the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Hate Crimes Act, which, among other things, expanded the hate crimes law to cover sexual orientation and gender identity. He said this, "Today, I'm not sure women or people with different sexual orientations face that kind of discrimination. I just don't see it," end quote. Well, this senator regretfully sees it. Those are votes that are deeply concerning. They are recent, they are important, and they clearly show this senator's point of view. There is a deep fear about what a Trump administration will bring in many places. And this is the context in which we must consider Senator Sessions' record and nomination to become the chief law enforcement of America.
And that was the testimony or summary of the testimony that Senator Feinstein gave this morning in her opening remarks as the ranking member on the Judiciary Committee, looking into the confirmation of Jeff Sessions, Senator Jeff Sessions, to become the next Attorney General. I'm speaking with Daniel Goldberg, the legal director at the Alliance for Justice and former Chief of Staff of the Department of Justice Office of Legislative Affairs. He previously spent 6 years as a senior counsel to Senator Tom Harkin and the Senate Health, Education, Labor and Pensions Committee. So there's a great deal of anticipation then. I mean, I'm reminded of when Governor Bill Clinton was elected. His nominee for Attorney General was scuttled pretty quickly. So it's not as if it's unprecedented. But I guess in this case, it comes down to the votes which the Republicans have. And I don't detect any disunity there. They seem to be quite determined to get this nominee through.
Well, I think this is a test for the United States Senate, for Senator McConnell and the U.S. Senate. And I hope the American people are watching and will hold them accountable. This is a test on whether they will be independent, whether they will exercise their important constitutional duty to advise and consent all executive branch nominees. We are hopeful that they will take a very, very careful look at the entire record of Senator Sessions. This is not just somebody that is a colleague to theirs, but this is somebody who, going back to when he was U.S. attorney, vigorously fought against civil rights. And he's continued that record as U.S. senator. So we're hopeful that the Senate will perform their constitutional duty, be an independent branch of government, and reject this nomination. But it's a real this is a real test for the new majority in the Senate. Are they just going to rubber stamp the Trump administration? Whether are they going to turn a blind eye to ethical lapses from the Trump administration, or are they going to be a real check in an independent branch of government?
Well, as much as Senator Feinstein, I thought, laid out a pretty devastating broadside of what Jeff Sessions has voted on, which would indicate what his positions are on these important issues, the expectation is that in tomorrow's hearing, Senator Cory Booker is going to lay out some fairly, I don't know whether it's new information, but there's certainly an anticipation that he is going to come down hard on Jeff Sessions. And this has already got the Republicans in a bit of a snit. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas on Tuesday described Senator Cory Booker's planned testimony, which is unprecedented in as much as no sitting senator has ever spoken against another sitting senator in a confirmation hearing. Senator Tom Cotton said, "I'm very disappointed that Senator Booker has chosen to start the 2020 presidential campaign by testifying against Senator Sessions. This disgraceful breach of custom is especially surprising." So what's the story there? Do you have any inkling of what, is there a bombshell about to be dropped tomorrow? Because as I say, so far, it feels fairly much as though the Republicans are just taking a strong partisan line and they're not particularly interested in the evidence that's being presented.
Well, I think that that Booker is going to speak from the heart. He's certainly a voice of conscience in the U.S. Senate, and hopefully that his colleagues will listen to what he has to say. In addition to Booker, you have somebody like John Lewis, somebody who has risked his life for civil rights, for advancing the cause of justice. And I think it's very telling that Congressman Lewis is also testifying against Senator Sessions tomorrow. You have really moral people who just have the moral character and are moral champions of the United States, who I think, and hopefully, the U.S. Senate will listen to what they have to say. These are people. Jeff Sessions today tried to mislead the American people. He tried to go in and mislead the American people about his record. He tried to portray himself as a champion of civil rights. I don't think the American people are fooled. I think if you look at his entire record going back to when he was U.S. attorney, this is somebody who has opposed every effort to advance the cause of civil rights in our country. And I think it's so telling to contrast that in him with somebody like John Lewis, who has who truly and literally put his life on the line to advance the cause of civil rights and civil liberties in our country. And hopefully the American people will see that contrast tomorrow, and the U.S. Senate will recognize that this is somebody who cannot be given the awesome responsibilities of being Attorney General of the United States.
Well, one of the extraordinary changes that I've noticed in this election year and will be, I think, carried out throughout this the term of President Trump, however long that lasts, that they've so proactive, and in many ways they turn whatever criticism on them, they turn it against whoever's criticizing them in a very proactive way. For example, Meryl Streep made a very heartfelt speech at the Golden Globes saying that Donald Trump was inciting people to be hateful in his mocking a disabled person and using his position of power to incite people to commit violence against each other. Kellyanne Conway turns that around and says that it was Meryl Streep that was inciting. I don't remember her telling the Hollywood people to get out of their chairs and put down their champagne bottles and take to the streets. But nevertheless, it is a tactic. And I noticed it on display today that there's so many Ted Cruz's going on talking about stuff that the Obama administration said in criminal terms. I wasn't aware of any of these accusations that he was leveling. And of course, one of the questions to Sessions was whether or not they'd put Hillary Clinton in jail. What are they going to put her in jail for? So far, they've never presented any evidence, but they keep saying that she's a criminal when, in fact, there may be some real smoking guns in Trump's past.
I think you raised so many good points in that question. I just wanted to focus on the last point. Regarding, there are serious questions regarding whether Jeff Sessions can serve as the necessary and effective check on the excesses of this administration. Can he be independent of President Trump? The Justice Department will have to advise the president about constitutional and legal boundaries around ethics and conflicts of interest in situations where the president does not understand nor respect those boundaries. He was a key advisor to the Trump campaign. He failed to criticize Trump's failure to release his tax returns, to untangle his business ties, to explain his ties to foreign governments. These are serious questions, and he did nothing in this hearing to alleviate the concerns that many, many people have, that instead of being the people's lawyers, he will be President Trump's lawyer. And I think the burden was on him, and he failed to do that today.
Well, Donald Trump's made it pretty clear that the reason he chose Sessions was that Sessions was the first U.S. senator to support him. And that was the case for the longest time. There was, people weren't exactly flocking to support him. So that seems to be what it comes down to. It's not about the man's competence. It's just a payback because of this incredibly egotistical, narcissistic man that is about to become president. If you honor him by endorsing him, this is your payback.
And it's very, very serious when you're talking about the Attorney General of the United States, somebody who truly has the power to take away somebody's liberty, to decide how to enforce some of our most critical laws. It is critical that that person understands what their role is, that they can serve as an essential independent check on the president and on the administration. And look, no doubt about it, today Senator Sessions used all the right cliches and the right talking points about the rule of law and that he understands what his role is. But I think if you look at his entire record going back to when he was United States Attorney, what is abundantly apparent is that this is a person who cannot be an independent check and an independent voice within that administration. And he did nothing today to alleviate those concerns.
So assuming he is voted in, which does seem to be the determination on the part of the Republicans, and that they don't listen to his critics, and particularly those that are going to be speaking tomorrow that we discussed, no matter how powerful their testimony would be, it does feel like the minds are made up, and this is really about kind of raw partisanship. Once he's in that situation as the nation's top lawyer and lawman, is there anything that people can do?
Well, I think two things. First of all, I do have to give a shout-out to the outstanding career attorneys at the Justice Department. Whether Jeff Sessions is confirmed or not, the career attorneys in every branch and division at the Justice Department are outstanding attorneys who are guided by one principle, and that's the rule of law. And whether Jeff Sessions is confirmed or not, that outstanding institution will continue the outstanding work that it has been doing. Second, the United States Senate and the American people will have to continue to hold him accountable. Today he tried to mischaracterize his record, but in doing so, he tried to walk back many of the most troubling pieces of his record. There's a lot that the American people and the senators can point to from today's hearing that if he deviates from what he said, can hold him accountable. It's really on all of us who care so deeply about equal rights, about proper enforcement of our most critical laws, that the confirmation hearings in many ways shouldn't be the end of the process, but should be the beginning of the process. And I just want to say one more thing. We saw today some senators doing outstanding work in raising these critical issues before the American people, asking Jeff Sessions very, very hard questions. Very soon, we will have a Supreme Court nominee go through the Senate Judiciary Committee. We hope for a lifetime seat, for a seat that will impact the laws in every area of the law. We are hopeful that some of the great performances and commitments we saw today will be reinforced and reinvigorated for a Supreme Court seat that will be so meaningful. So you played Senator Feinstein's statement earlier. So many other senators really asked such probing questions, and we're going to need them again for a Supreme Court fight coming up.
Well, Daniel Goldberg, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much.
And again, I've been speaking with Daniel Goldberg, who's the legal director at the Alliance for Justice and a former chief of staff of the Department of Justice Office of Legislative Affairs. He previously spent 6 years as a senior counsel to Senator Tom Harkin and the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. Scroll down the right-hand side, sign up for iTunes podcast, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.
Down.